This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. Boy, am I excited. We have a really special guest today, legendary singer Judy Collins. Yes, the Judy Collins. I can't believe I'm actually talking to her. Her new book is called Cravings, How I Conquered Food. And she's here to talk to us. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
It's so good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Your music has been such a wonderful part of my life. I'm just hearing your songs makes me happy.
Thank you. That's great. I'm glad to hear it.
It's got to be a great feeling to know that you've influenced so many people. You've entertained so many people.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate. You know, I've been doing this for about 58 years, and it's still going strong, so I feel very happy about that.
And you're still singing even today?
Of course. I do about 130 shows a year. I keep myself active.
That's insane. 130, that's a lot of shows.
Yeah.
Is everyone fun, or is there still a lot of hard work involved?
Well, it's hard work. Of course it is. Being a road warrior is not an easy job. But, of course, I get paid for the traveling, and what I actually love is the singing.
Right. And we love hearing your... You have a very angelic voice.
Thank you.
You really do. I mean, when you hear Send in the Clowns, and you hear Both Sides Now, and all these other wonderful songs, it's just like... It just makes you feel so good, and it takes you back to the time when it came out. It's just a wonderful feeling. There's nothing that matches that.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Let's talk about Cravings. Now, this book is by Nantalee's Books, and how did this come about? It's a fascinating book.
Oh, well, good. Well, I really felt about 8 years ago I found that I had known for a long time about Grace. She'd been on it on and off and knew that it worked. But I was finally able to surrender and get a total recovery from something that had been bugging me for my whole life. So I decided I wanted to write about it and let people know that there was an easier way to deal with this. And in the process, of course, I was interested in all the diets and dietitians and dieters that I've been on their diets forever. And so I decided I would investigate along with my own story. I would tell the story of, I think, about a dozen diet gurus throughout history, including William the Conqueror and Lord Byron and Andrew Weil and, other famous dieters that we go on, like Atkins.
And Scarsdale,
I had a great time telling my story and theirs.
And it's fascinating. And some of the background stuff you didn't even know before. I was fascinated by all these different people. And, they all have different opinions. And, you know, what do we follow? There's so many diets out there. I mean...
That's right.
And where do you go? Where do you turn? Who do you know? How do you know who to trust?
That's right. Well, the simple solution is that this is all about allergies. And when you take certain foods out of your food plan... And I don't even ever refer to it as a diet. If you take certain foods out, you find relief from a lot of compulsion. And the foods you don't want to eat are, of course, sugar, grains, flour, wheat, corn, and that's about it. Salt is fine, by the way. Everybody's scared of salt. Also, fat has to be in your diet in order for you to lose weight. That's something we didn't know. Everybody wanted us to eat skinny cheeses and fat-free this and fat-free that, and it's destructive to your health to do that.
Well, I'm amazed with all that you've been through that you're still going strong today. I mean, when you read this book, you realize what you've been through and how you were very much, it seemed like you were very much alone in all your struggles, too. I mean, you had people around you, but they didn't know what was going on.
Well, sometimes it was because, well, with alcoholism, of course, you lie about it to everybody, but
yeah.
Never mind. It's hard to find the solution, but then if you are lucky and you get sick enough, then you do. And the same thing is true with the food. You know, people didn't really, even when Karen Carpenter died, because she starved herself to death, really, with her anorexia, and she was on the same diets that I was on, the Atkins and et cetera, the fasting and the pills, and even then, nobody talked about how she died or why she died or what she died of. Nobody said, you know, this is the result of an illness. It's an eating disorder, and I think a lot of people have had a lot of ideas throughout the centuries about weight and how to lose it and how to keep ahead of the curve. One thing I will say is that fat is necessary in the diet. Full-fatted cheeses. I have 4 tablespoons of fat every day, either, well, it could be butter, it could be salad dressing, it could be oil. Mm-hmm. Those things are necessary in a food plan that's really balanced. And then, of course, cutting out the foods that kill you and make you heavy and destroy your system and create diabetes and all those things, which we already sort of know. But it's a simple plan, and it works.
Right. Well, this book's more than about food, though. I mean, you go into more detail about, you talk about your alcoholism, and you talk about your struggles with your son and when he died, and that's so sad. I'm really sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's the worst.
I don't know how you even get through something like that, but you're a survivor. I mean, you're absolutely a survivor, and my heart goes out to you just reading this book. I almost wanted to cry, you know. I was like...
I'm sorry. It's hard. But, you know, I figured if you don't tell it and if you don't be truthful about it, what's the point?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to balance that, of course, with trying to also incorporate the idea that there are all these other people in the world who have tried to deal with these issues, and all of us have problems, you know. We lose people, we have illnesses, we get sick, we get well, we struggle. But there are certain things about overall health which I think are vital in terms of mental health. I think these illnesses that I talk about, alcoholism and eating disorders, they're actually mental illnesses, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing that it's important for us to get to the stage where we can actually be fully present and fully copacetic.
And get past that embarrassment, the idea of being embarrassed about any of this, because it's something that all of us are going through.
You know,
there's plenty of people that are going through the same thing that we're going through, you know, and that you can't be embarrassed about it as much as you don't want to talk about it. But especially men have an awful time talking about things.
I know they do. And actually, you'd be surprised, there are an awful lot of men, probably equal numbers, of men who have issues with weight and struggling and trying to diet and doing all the things that we do. And the thing about this is that what I want to do is help other people. Let other people know that there's a shorter route to a joyful approach to eating.
You must have a big heart. You've got to have a big heart. I mean, the fact you want to help people and listening to your songs, you can hear that coming from the soul. You can hear it coming from that it's really something you're letting out of your heart. I mean, you've got to have a big heart.
I did it absolutely to give other people a window onto solutions. I read a lot about these books and a lot of people's lives, but including, you know, when my son died, for instance, one of the reasons that I wrote the book that I wrote called Sanity and Grace is that the books that I read talked a lot about the problem. And that's one of the things that I hear in eating disorders and alcoholism. A lot of people talk a lot about the problem. A lot of times you don't get anything about the solution. And so I wanted to write about the solution. After I go through all the darkness, which I think that's what it takes to get into the light.
And we get to see what you eat during the day, too, which is nice. You're like, oh, boy, she's been so good at it. I'll try that, too, and try to eat the same things and see if it works for me.
Yeah, and it's simple. And there is a program that you can go online and find it and get a hold of the the food plan and, you know, what you can eat and so on. And it's actually very simple. It's also very scientific because allergy is based on the science of the body. And there are certain things that we're allergic to that cause us to have cravings. And so if you take those foods out, hello.
I'm here.
The cravings go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the big problems I have is that eating sweets late at night. What does somebody do about that? That feeling before you go to bed, you want to have something sweet.
You know, what I've found with this plan, which is the Gray Sheet plan, you can find it online. I have three balanced meals a day, three meals a day, nothing in between. And I have at every meal, in the morning I have a cup of yogurt and a cup of fruit. And then for the lunch and dinner, I have 4 ounces of protein, 2 cups of veggies or salad, and then 3 cups of veggies or salad with a tablespoon of oil at lunch and 3 tablespoons at night. And that can include butter, salad dressing, and so on. By the time I have a full day of my meals, my blood sugar is very steady. After a few days when the cravings go away, your blood sugar evens out and you don't find those dramatic rises and dips and peaks of your desire to eat. So that actually cuts the nighttime eating down. Anyway, for me it does.
Well, anyway, what you're saying is that if you eat enough during the day, you won't have that craving at night.
That's the goal, and that's pretty much what many of us who are on this food plan find, that it's just, it takes away this constant compulsion for more and more at all kinds of different hours of the day. And also you stay away from sugar and you find you don't want it.
I wanted to ask you if you had ever met Karen Carpenter.
No, although I'm a great admirer of her. No, I never met her. We never got to talk about this. Too bad, but...
That would have been wonderful if you could have gone through it together. It would have been great.
But I tell her story, and I mean, I don't tell her whole story, but I do mention that she suffered from this problem.
Did you have the denial that she had about... You talk about in the book how you felt like you were fat, but I've never thought of you as being fat. I mean, all the times I've ever seen you on TV or wherever I saw you, you never looked fat.
Well, from the beginning, early on, I found exercise in order to treat my depression, frankly. And so the exercise has held me in good stead. I exercise just about every day, and at least 4 times a week, but sometimes 6 or 7. And so exercising, I think that's sort of where you get the clarity for other things. You start to exercise and you get back in touch with your body, and then you start to make changes slowly but surely. Don't jump into this and start jumping down 50 times every hour. You might hurt your feet, you know.
Right.
Go at it slowly. Take it in increments, slowly but surely. And because I always exercised and I was always either purging or dieting or running or, you know, I always kept my weight down. I was never over 140. And now I'm steady at between 150 and 120 all the time. It's pretty much.
Wow, very good for you. You're just a major success story. It's amazing to talk to you, to know that all that you've been through, that you're still there. I mean, all the time, something could have happened to you at any time during your career.
Well, you know, I'm an extremist, I guess. Either that, or I'm a wild-haired maniac about health and about not using big pharma and not taking a lot of pills and, you know, going to the natural, more natural resources that we have. I have a homeopath. I've worked with a homeopath for 40 years. You know, I started.
Wow.
Doing acupuncture 40 years ago, acupuncture, alternative medicine, massages, body work, you know, all these things, because in part, I've got to be able to get up on the stage and sing. In the case now, the present tense, I do 130 shows a year, so I've got to live like an athlete. And it just means that what I want to do and what I want to encourage people to do is to live to their fullest, to their absolutely their best performance peak. They want to reach that and even go beyond it.
Exactly. And you survived polio and tuberculosis and all kinds of, your marriage crumbled. I mean, you were going through so much stuff.
I know. It was a mess.
I mean, polio is something you can die from. I mean, it's
yeah, it is.
But did you have like a not so serious?
Well, I don't know. I think polio is serious no matter when you have it, but I was lucky. I got it in 1950 when it was it was a thing that was killing a lot of people, and you could they didn't want you to go to the swimming pools. And I don't know where I got it. I don't. Who knows? But anyway, I came down with it and was hospitalized, and I was in the hospital about 2 months. But I was lucky, and they had, I don't know what kind of drugs they gave me. I wouldn't know. Well, I suppose there were antibiotics already, and probably that was something that I was being treated with, but I don't remember. And of course, I had tuberculosis, and I had about 5 months of incarceration in hospitals in Arizona, and then in Colorado for 4 months. And in both cases, I have total recovery. I didn't have any paralysis of my legs, which I could have had. Many people did, of course.
Franklin Roosevelt for one, yeah.
Yes, and of course, FDR had a very advanced case, and he certainly was crippled, and it easily happened to many people, but I was lucky enough that it didn't to me. And then the other illnesses that I've had, the polio, the TB, college students get,
mono.
Oh. Mono. And because I had mono and because I had TB, I can't give blood because they apparently, it has to do with the liver, and it has to do with the fact that you always carry the marker even after you recover.
Mm.
So I want to give blood, but I can't.
Oh. Well, what would you say to somebody who went through what you went through and is going through it now and is afraid to tell anybody? What advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing is to talk about it to somebody, maybe a best friend, maybe a stranger. But get online and see what you can find in terms of help. And there are a lot of anonymous programs, a lot of them, they're all free, groups that deal with everything. I think there must be about 300 to 500 groups in the country that are based on the Big Book, on the work of Dr. Bob and Bill, because they have to do with allergy and habit and addiction. So if you've got something you think is an addiction, then get some help with it. You know, there's Gamblers Anonymous. There's even Mistresses Anonymous, by the way.
I don't know why that makes me laugh, but it does. But we all need somebody to talk to. We all need somebody who's going to listen to and really care about what we have to say. And you're a very caring person. You're a very valuable part of society.
Well, I try to help where I can. I mean, that's what else can you do? You have these kinds of experiences, and I don't know what to do except share them and hope that I make it a little easier for somebody else. I've always been a great reader, so I've always read biographies. I've always read stories of how did people get through things? You know, what did they do? So I wanted to tell people verse and chapter what I did.
That actor you talk about, and you don't mention his name in the book, he it sounds like he almost saved your life.
Well, he did save my life. Patrick, his name was, but I won't give his full name. But he was such a wonderful man, and he did help me. And the whole point is, when you recover from something deadly, it's a good thing to pass along the information so you can help somebody else.
Exactly. Well, thank God for Patrick. He was there for you. And you weren't afraid to call people. You weren't afraid to reach out to somebody. And
I was, and then I wasn't. I don't know why.
Well, what made you cross that line? What made you suddenly want to reach out?
Well, I was desperate. You know, I was sick enough that I was really desperate. And I think that's why these kinds of things are Partly it's because they're hidden. And so you feel some shame about them. Well, there's no reason to feel shame about them because they're illnesses and they're things that all kinds of people have. So I think also the more we talk about them and get them out there in the language of the community, the easier it is for people to have these issues to go. You know, it's like teenagers talking about their depression and being able to go to a health professional at school and say, you know, I'm really depressed. I'd like to jump off the bridge here. And that's not an unusual or a strange thing for a teenager to think. You know, I too had my experience of being a depressed teenager, and it's no fun. So maybe if we make it easier to talk about these things, people will not be so afraid to go and get help.
Now, you were eating bazooka, Necco wafers, Almond Joys, mud pies, peppermint patties. Have you cut out all of those from your diet now?
You bet.
Not one. You don't ever indulge in anything?
No.
Is that hard?
No. It's not hard. It's hard if you're eating those things to quit, to not do it. You know, you set up the compulsion and then you're off to the races. But once you stop the chemical interaction in your body, which produces allergy and compulsion, you're on the way to getting free of those things, and you don't have to. Sugar is not a normal human condiment. I mean, it's not something we had before refined sugar came along. We had other things. We had honey, a little bit of honey, but you can't get a whole lot of it unless you take the whole hive, you know.
Right, exactly.
So,
Lewis, are you still with Lewis now?
Oh, yes.
How long have you been with him now?
Well, we've been together actually about 38 years.
Wow. That's a long time. Thank God for him.
Yeah. I always say it's very good for a hippie.
And what he did for you after your son died is amazing. I mean, just reading about how he was there for you and listened to you and let you cry and let you...
So wonderful.
Where do you find a man like that?
It's hard to find a good man nowadays.
Do you have a lot of other singers that you know, that you talk to a lot?
Some. I have a lot of friends. Some are singers, some are not.
I was just curious whether you knew any, if you had known over the years other singers.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely.
I guess you would have to, being in that business. I guess you would have to.
Some of them well, some of them not well.
Stephen Stills, and you talk, that the whole thing with Stephen Stills was, I must say, was fascinating to read about, but it had to be very hard for you, though.
Well, it's interesting. We still have a friendship. We're going to go out on tour at the end of the summer.
Are you really? Well, I'm glad that had a happy ending.
Yeah, it certainly has.
I mean, if you love somebody, it doesn't necessarily mean you can live with them.
You bet. Absolutely.
I mean, it's all a... I mean, you're such a practical person.
Yeah, I am practical, and I'm a bit of a prude, so I probably...
You don't come off that way at all.
I know, but...
What do you do if somebody calls you up, a friend of yours calls you up and wants to go out to lunch with you? What do you do?
I take my scale and I go out to lunch.
You do? Okay. Yeah. And are you able to find things to eat?
Oh, absolutely. It's very simple. Protein, vegetable, salad, fruit. You can get those almost anywhere.
Right. So it doesn't create a problem if somebody interrupts your day and wants you to... Well, that's good.
No.
What makes you happy today?
Oh, my work, my going to movies, reading books. I just started reading Proust. Isn't that wonderful after all this time?
it's so neat that you're a reader. We don't think of singers. We think of singers only being obsessed about singing and music and stuff. But they do. We forget that they have a life just like we do. They have other interests too.
Of course. No, my passion is reading. I love to read and writing. And so, you know, writing this new book has been, it's an extension of that passion. Certainly, you know, I've written, this is probably my ninth book, maybe. So I've been able to write. That's also a miracle that it was not until after I got sober that I really started to get a hold of this writing thing, and it's been very good for me.
You talk about bulimia in the book, and I remember that TV movie with Meredith Baxter, where she was bulimic. That movie still sticks with me today when I think about what a horrific thing that must be to go through, and you went through it.
Yes, I was bulimic for 11 years, so it's really an addiction, and it's really an illness, and it can be very destructive to your physical body, you know. A lot of things go haywire. I mean, I'm still dealing with having osteoporosis because of that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do the best you can.
Nothing stops you, though.
No, it can't, for heaven's sake.
I mean, you just keep going on and on and on, and you're a miracle. You really are. I mean, I don't know you that well, other than to talk to you right now, so I really don't. But just reading your book, I feel like I know something about you.
Well, good, good.
Does that sound weird for me to say that?
No, not at all. Well, that's what one hopes when one writes a book. You know, you hope you get the picture over as to what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
Losing your son when your Lewis helped you, was he the main thing that got you through it? Or what got you through it other than him?
Well, I was, first of all, I had incredible help. I went to wonderful groups. I went to suicide survivor groups. I went to therapy. I wrote about it. I talked about it. I reached out to people, and people reached out to me. You know, Joan Rivers called me about 4 days after my son's death, and she said, I know you want to cancel everything and stop working. She said, but you can't do that, because if you do that, you won't heal.
That sounds like sound advice.
You know, she really knew. She'd been there, because her husband had killed himself a few years before.
Right, that was horrible.
So she knew, and she was able to share with me about that. It was incredibly helpful.
And I would think, especially with her, the laughter. I mean, being able to laugh is such a wonderful thing. I mean,
being able to laugh is another thing that got me through it. It certainly took a while, but eventually I could and I did, and I think it's so healing. We got to laugh, you know, we got to laugh. We live in a very hard, terribly difficult world. And we always need to know that, first of all, it's not about us. Secondly, we're not alone. And thirdly, we got to laugh.
So how did you ever blame yourself at all for it?
One of the other things that Joan said to me when she called me that day was, she said, I want you to know there are no guilts in suicide. You didn't cause it. You couldn't control it. You weren't there. You couldn't have, you know, you said all you had to say through the years.
Right.
You couldn't have prevented it, and it's not your fault.
Sounds like Joan was a big help to you, too.
Oh, she was incredibly helpful.
I mean, she was such a... I mean, I still can hear her laugh. I think I'll always hear her laugh.
Oh, she was amazing, this woman. Amazing. I adored her.
It's just, you know, just part of the society we all needed. We all needed that laugh.
And, you know, she had had a television show. She had a television show. And about 2 years before Clark's death, maybe 3 years before his death, she invited... I was on the show.
Right. I saw that on YouTube, yeah.
And she brought my son, his wife, and his baby to New York to see me, to surprise me.
Oh, I didn't see that one. I have to go look that up.
Yes. I mean, it was incredible. So she already knew Clark. Oh, dear.
So how old is she now, his daughter?
She is 29 and beautiful and strong and wonderful and healthy, and I'm just crazy about her. She's wonderful. She's a wonderful person.
You get to see her enough?
I do indeed. I'll see her next week.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, give her a nice big hug for me.
I will. I gotta go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but this has been absolutely wonderful. You're an angel. Thank you so much. The book again is called Judy Collins' Cravings, How I Conquered Food. And we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.